Blog Talk Radio.
Noble and honorable listening audience, you're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. Had a little technical glitch, but as always, we're going to overcome. So, dear beloved people, I'm just honored and excited and pumped up to have with us our guest, a great thinker, a great person, and even a great neighbor. You know, sometimes you have people that are great, you don't be in the reach of them. You know, I've always been able to attract and be around great people. And I met a lady on the train, and we were in the same industry, and I found out she was Dr. Marlena Coggins Berkheimer. And Dr. was in the same industry, higher education industry, or the educational business, or the educational pursuit, and she has written a marvelous book called Affordable College for Everyone. Know before you go, don't get trapped repaying a large student loan. I'd like to welcome to the Blog Talk Radio, Religion Means Alive, the great, honorable, and noble Dr. Berkheimer. Dr. Berkheimer, welcome to Religion Means Alive. Would you be so kind enough to give us an opening statement?
Wow, the way you introduced me, there's very little I could say. But one of the things I would like to say is higher education in America is very, very expensive. But not knowing how to shop for higher education can be even more expensive. Everyone should learn how to shop for higher education. No one should be trapped repaying a large student loan. Dr. Alfred, Dr. Muhammad.
I was waiting for a longer statement, so I put it on mute. And I was waiting. You know, doctor, you hit me so concisely. And
well,
that
I'm
shocked for words. But let me say this to you, since I'm shocked and ready to ask questions. You and I have been in an industry, I hate to call it an industry, the for-profit school industry. And I'm not going to give any of them any free commercials today. I've worked in medical education and all forms of education. Tell us the difference, first, between the various forms of higher education, or what we would call post-secondary education, use the old industry term, and kind of tease out that.
Yeah, education has evolved. When you think about education, 20 years ago in America, there was about 1,200 colleges and universities. 20 years later, there are over 3,500 colleges and universities in America. 20 years ago, there were about 150 college academic majors. Today, there are over 1,500 academic programs for students to select from. Higher education continues to evolve. You know, there is a saying in America, ignorance is no longer an excuse. But in higher education, ignorance is the norm because nobody knows what they're doing when it comes to shopping for higher education.
And doctor, you know what? That is a term that every parent, every student, and we're going to repeat this broadcast again, and those who might want to listen to this broadcast again and tell friends, you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/religionmeansalive/04/2015, and you can listen to this broadcast. This is valuable stuff. What are we talking about when we say shopping for education? I mean, are all schools same? But I want you to finish first, just before we talk about what is this whole post-secondary education business about?
Oh, God. It's higher education is no longer about education. It's a corporate city. And everybody's out there just to make money. Don't get me wrong. Higher education is important because we are living in the information age. So in order to stay earning, you gotta stay learning. So today, higher education is no longer a destination, but a journey. So if in your early stage of this journey, you are trapped repaying a large student loan, it could prevent you from becoming or staying professionally competitive. It is every parent's dream to send the kids to college. Every parent, you know, they want their children to have a better quality of life than they had. But reality is, if you are a parent and your child graduated at the age of 24 with a bachelor's degree and over $45,000 in student loans, depending on the career of choice, you might have just strapped your child with a financial burden that will prevent them from staying professionally competitive.
Yes, so that's this whole idea around student debt. Now, the President of the United States has called for free two-year education, junior college education for every American citizen. What do you think about that as a way of reducing college education? I mean, the cost of college education.
Well, I think it's a great move that the president is trying to. But, of course, I am trying to stay out of politics. And but what I would say, though, is that it is not making the community colleges free. It is changing the culture in the community colleges, as well as changing the programs offering. Many high school seniors do not want to go to the community college because community college is not very expensive. The for-profit colleges charge 4-1. The cost of tuition is 4-1 as compared to the community colleges. But yet they get one in every 4 financial aid dollars. You know, so reality is, unless the community colleges change their school culture, change their course offering, free may not be free. And students may still choose to go to the for-profit colleges and universities because they may believe that those colleges are offering them what they are looking for.
Well, let me ask you this, doctor. Are they, you know, you and I both have worked in that industry. Unfortunately, I've received quite a few paychecks from them. So, you know, I'm not too eager to get back to them again. Why isn't it that our young people, particularly in these so-called underserved communities, I don't like minorities, because America is a collection of many different ethnicities. So I just would say, and these underserved communities, why do students decide to go to some of these for-profit colleges that charge astronomical tuition? I know one school, for an example, again, I'm not going to give them a free commercial, just to be an automotive mechanic, with a very poor placement, they want $28,000. Is that a good picture, doctor, or is there something wrong with that picture?
Well, again, it's It has to do with culture, and it has to do with how one feels about themselves. You walk the streets and you wonder, you see all these young people wearing $250 sneakers. So why would you would still ask yourself the question, why would a young person choose to buy sneakers that cost $250? Why would they choose to go to a for-profit school where the money is going to the private sector and on Wall Street as opposed to paying for what they can afford? A lot of young people believe that if I go to a school with a prestigious name, it defines who I am. And to some degree it does. But at the end of the day, degrees do not get you jobs. Degrees get you interviews. People still get jobs.
One of my major problems, Doctor, with that picture is that some of these, well, I haven't worked with any of them that didn't, but most of these for-profit schools don't even teach children the art of interviewing. It's a very scant attention. One of the problems I've had with those types of schools, that these children, these young people, older people, students rather, don't have even an idea about the whole art of obtaining a job and its relationship to education. Can you speak with us about that?
You know, I mentioned to you earlier that higher education is no longer a destination but a journey. When I say shopping for education, I simply mean you shop everything. For example, one of the things I tell people that you should shop is your professors. I recently went to a high school and I asked a high school counselor, a high school advisor, how do you teach your high school students how to shop their professors? The high school counselor was very proud. She said, of course. We teach our students how to shop their professors. The way we do it is that we teach our students to read the bios of all the professors that are teaching them. I turned to her and I said, that is just information gathering. That is not teaching someone how to shop their professors. The way you shop your professors, you have to know, because we live in a world where most of the universities, 80% of their faculties are adjuncts. It means that the same teacher may be teaching at Columbia, where the student is paying over $1,500 a credit, and going to the community college and teaching the same course, where the community college is costing $165 or less a credit. So what you do is you check to make sure that there is transfer credits availability from one institution to the next. And if there's transfer credits availability, you could take some of your courses in the lower costing institution, transfer those credits up to the higher costing institution, and you could save between $15,000 to $25,000 in tuition, where statistics have proven that the average college graduate is graduating owing at least $25,000 to $35,000 in student loans.
Doctor, I want to ask you about some of these shortcuts that I don't think most of our people know. Tell us what's the college level examination program and the Dantes. I think they call it something else now. What can that do to lower the cost of education?
The only thing you could do to lower the cost of education is learning how to shop. As I mentioned earlier, there are 3,500 colleges and universities. You have to learn to shop them. You have to learn to shop life experience credits. You have to learn to shop articulation agreements. You have to learn to shop transfer credits. You have to learn to shop professors. There's so many different things. You have to learn to shop. You have to shop fellowships. You have to shop, oh, Lord, there's so much you have to learn to shop. If you learn to shop, then you could save money. Another way you could save money is depending on when you start shopping. Like most of the times, a parent may ask, when is a good time to start shopping for my child who is in K-12? When is a good time to start shopping for my child in K-12 for college? My suggestion is start as early as possible. The first thing you should possibly do is from the time that child born, start some sort of college saving plan. If you cannot start for financial reasons, you cannot start a college saving plan, the next thing you need to do, starting in the eighth grade, you should start scholarship shopping. A lot of people would say, why in the eighth grade? The eighth grade is too young. But think about this. If in the eighth grade, there are billions of dollars in scholarships out there that are offered every year. If in the eighth grade you apply for 20 scholarships, you may get 5 responses, and they will tell you the child is too young, but it will also give you the scholarship requirement. So if you do that every year for the next 5 years, by the time that child is ready for college, you may have had 30 scholarship application with all the requirements necessary for your child to attend college. So in the 12th grade, you could possibly have 25 to 30 applications that you could submit under the required time with all the requirements that could help your child or children get enough money to fund their college education.
You know what it interests me is that how many educated parents, I mean, I'm talking about people going to colleges. You know, I've had persons, that have been physicians, and they know nothing about school shopping, educational shopping.
Tell us more what you mean.
Yes.
Dr. Muhammad, yes. I want to ask you a question. As you say, we are both enrollment managers. You and I have both worked in higher education for many, many years. Most of the enrollment managers that are working in the industry today, they are only trained to sell their inventory of courses. They do not know anything else.
Yeah, I have found that to be quite unfortunate. I recently had to counsel a person that was looking through, didn't know even the procedure. His son had wanted to be a veterinarian, and he'd gotten rejected at the veterinarian schools, and he's been totally, you know, very depressed. And, you know, I referred him to a medical school offshore that would accept him. He was so excited that his son was able to get in. But you're right. But I mean, I'm talking about guidance counselors. So let me just reintroduce this book. Mm-hmm. Let me just take a moment.
Remember, most guidance counselors have never even worked in the high school environment. I mean, in the college environment. Most of them, they went to college. They learn courses on how to be a good guidance counselor. They utilize a lot of the services and a lot of the technical support and a lot of the software that was provided to them by the federal government. But they don't have real-life experience of what really goes on in higher education. They don't realize, they do not teach the parents. What they do, a lot of them, is that they work with the kids and they try to help the kids apply for colleges within the deadline. But applying for college is not a student decision. It is a family decision. So you don't sit with a child and apply for college. You sit with a family and apply for college. And this is the problem that's going on in America today. Too many kids under 20 are making decisions as to what school they should attend. And attending college is no longer a family decision. This is why at the ending of the first or second semester, an average of 15 to 20% of kids who actually start college have to drop out because their parents cannot afford to pay tuition.
Answer. the parents are very, well, you know, again, this shopping thing. You're right, they can't afford it. The child is still suited for that particular school. I mean, it's just, it amazes me. Again, how many parents, what can we do besides getting your book? And I want you to give your website. Affording College for Everyone. Know before you go. Don't get trapped repaying a large student loan. Now, I really enjoyed this book because it's case studies. And I worked in the industry longer than I care to tell. Worked in all sides of the industry, from, you know, the so-called vocational schools to actually medical and veterinary schools. And I just find that so much ignorance. The average person these including the guidance counselor, doesn't even know what are the requirements for medical school, the difference in medical school, what does accreditation mean. I mean, we got so much to talk about.
Well, I would not. I have met some wonderful guidance counselors, and I think that many of them really, really care. But I also have found that many of them are really territorial in the sense that they want to protect their environment and they don't want people like me to come in and to talk to their students. And they do not realize that the more information the students and their parents get, it's the better decisions they have to make when coming to education. We are living in a world that we do not stand a chance without education. But education, higher education without student loans is possible. But we have to be able, you can't go into this with eyes wide shut. And this is what's happening. Students are buying, investing into brand names and not into the type of jobs you're going to get. Case scenario. Let me ask you a question. Dr. Muhammad, listen to this very carefully. Let's assume two students graduate from college. One graduates from Columbia Teachers College with a bachelor's degree in teaching, and another graduate from Hunter College, which is a state university, a state college, with a bachelor's degree in teaching. And both of them want to work in the New York public schools. Which teacher do you think will make more money?
The teacher from Columbia University Teachers College.
That is incorrect.
Okay, you see.
That is incorrect. They both earn the same amount of money. Because they're both coming in at entry level. Salaries are set by the state of New York. So it doesn't matter where you graduate, whether you graduated from Columbia or Hunter. So
you know, doctor, you tripped me up on that one. And I should have known that answer. I really should. Thank you.
But the point I am making is that when you're shopping, before you pick a school, you have to ask yourself the career choice. For example, if you want to be a teacher, why get into a large student loan debt to go to one of those Ivy Leagues when you're going to make the same salary as someone graduating from the state school? Now, if you decide to go to a community college and get your associate degree, the state university and get your bachelor's degree, and the Columbia University and get your master's degree, you will still save $70,000 to $80,000 in tuition by the time it's all finished.
This is one of the things I think people, I hate to say this, but I think it's pretty true. I have found that the average person, you go to Missouri, they don't know Kane State University. They don't know the difference between Seton Hall. I think most of these colleges and universities, probably with the exception of maybe Yale and the ones that are known for sports, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. Am I correct or am I just having an illusion?
Well, I have news for you. The only reason why a lot of these colleges are recognized is because of sport.
Right.
Think about it. You think he would know anything about Seton Hall if they didn't have a good sports team?
Absolutely.
You know, of course, we know that the first university in America is Harvard. Let me ask you a question. If between Harvard University and Columbia University, they are two wonderful universities. But which school do you think will cost more? What school do you think is better, Harvard or Columbia?
Probably there's no real difference.
All right. Because I would think that, you know, it depends on major. Harvard might be a little more prestigious because Harvard is the first university in America. But think about this. Harvard University and Columbia University, which university you think costs more to attend?
Probably Columbia.
Why? Why would you say Columbia?
Because Columbia probably has a smaller endowment than Harvard. Harvard has about $20 billion in endowment, so they're getting income.
But you know what? You are correct. Columbia is more expensive than Harvard, but it has nothing to do with endowment, philanthropies. It has everything to do with demographics. Columbia is in New York.
Right.
So you're paying for real estate.
And that's true. And NYU is another one that doesn't even rank up there with Columbia. Again, you're paying for real estate.
No, they are good schools. Don't get me wrong. They are
I'm not minimizing them at all.
Yes, they are great schools. And as a doctor myself,
at the same level that the State University of New York, Stony Brook, and perhaps some of the other state schools, even Michigan or Wisconsin, are probably on the same level in terms of prestige. Yeah.
No, but you see, the thing is, though, a school is not determined by brand name. A school is determined, the quality of a school should be determined by its instruction. Who are your professors? But if most of the Ivy League schools or most of the schools have adjunct professors, it means the same professors that are teaching at Columbia and NYU are teaching at the state schools. So how could one school be better than the other if they both have the same type of instructions, the same professors?
That is a profound problem. Explain to our audience, for those who may not be familiar with higher education, what is an adjunct professor as opposed to a professor, assistant professor, instructor? Why don't you just take us through the ranks of higher education, what those ranks mean?
Well, it means tenure. Another thing is, though, a lot of the colleges, right, they call people professors, and they only have a master's degree. You are not entitled to be called a professor unless you go and become a doctor. Not because you worked at a college or university for 10, 15 years and give you a right to become a professor. So a lot of times you have all these people that are being called professor. 20 years ago, you would never be called a professor without having a doctoral degree. Now everybody is being called professors. People with bachelor's degrees, people with master's degrees are being called professors. Most classes in a lot of the universities right now, the classes are being taught by research students, and the people who move the furniture make more money than the professors because they are adjuncts. They get 20 hours a week to work at a lot of the colleges and universities.
And, you know, that is a – tell us what first – so we won't be just talking to ourselves and talking to our audience. What does it mean to be an adjunct professor? Because I know people are adjunct professors, and they're so excited that they're adjunct professors. Tell us, what does that mean?
Well, an adjunct professor is someone who is really just on the payroll, and they walk into a college, they work at multiple universities teaching the same course. So let's assume you're a math teacher. You may walk into Seton Hall, teach a course in math, and then you may go down to the community college across the street and teach the same math course. So you're just on the payroll. You don't get benefits. You don't get anything. You may just be teaching 10 hours a week at 5 days.
I read this very sad story of a woman who was living in her car, and she was teaching 10 adjuncts, and I think they were paying her like $1,500 for a three-hour course per semester. So she was only making about $30,000 a year. No benefits, couldn't get on Medicaid. She slept in her car. And I know a lot of adjuncts that are living like that.
That
I don't know someone else to teach an adjunct course, and I thought, wow, exciting. $800. $800 for 45 hours of instruction. I said, that's hardly $10 an hour. And then you have to grade papers, you have to take an exam, and you have to meet students, and they don't even give you an office to meet the students in. Isn't that something? You have to meet somebody at Starbucks. So what are your office hours at? My office hours at Starbucks at the corner of 32nd and 8th Avenue.
You
so
remember what I said.
Wrong with that picture. Let's talk a minute, Doctor, about as we shop for education, the hot professions that people should be entering. Because, you know, I think that there's something to be said against these liberal arts education. I'm all for general ed and liberal arts education. But, I mean, frankly, when you are here shopping for a job, there is a lots and lots things that we should look at in terms of where you're going to get employed. Because the New York Times was reporting about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, about the number of students that graduated from college that were unemployed, and they had gone to some fairly good schools.
Well, the thing is, though, as I mentioned to you earlier, there are over 1,500 academic programs out there. And if you notice, of the 1,500 academic program out there, a lot of them came into being in the last 20 years. Courses like criminal justice, they found its origin in LA Law and CSI. So some of the programs that you be being taught out there was founded from people watching certain television shows and loved it. And before you know it, an academic program got started. There are over 1,500 academic programs to select from. So students today, when it comes to higher education, it is no joke. You got to know what you're doing. Or else you may end up paying over $100,000 for a degree and not get a job.
So what fields should people, what's the hot fields that people should be getting into?
Well, you know, IT is always good. We're living in the information age, software development. You can't go wrong with medicine, science, forensics. You know, bottom line is, it's hard for me to say. I believe that every field is wonderful. Look at today. 20 years ago, you would have never thought being a chef was a lucrative investment. But chefs are among the top 20 income earners today. 20 years ago, you would have never think that people who do, forgive my accent, but people who do tattoos may not make money. But it's hard to tell. I believe that you should still follow your dream. Be the best you can. Market yourself. And just watch how you invest in your education. But who am I to say what is and what isn't? Because people are making money in almost every industry. You just got to know what you're doing.
Yes, now. Because what I'm concerned about is people getting degrees and still can't get jobs.
Well, that is true because, you know, There is a saying, if you don't know what you want to do, go to school and get a liberal arts. This is what a lot of times advisors advise young people to do. If you don't know what you do, what you want to do, play it safe. Go to school and get a liberal arts degree. Granted. But the way how I would tell you, if I am a parent advising my child, maybe you need to send your child into a conservatory for a year. Maybe you may need to send your child to Peace Corps for a year so that your child get to understand what people on the other side of the world are going through so that they could grow up. So when they do come back to come to America and decide to go back to school, they would have matured tremendously. Don't send your children to college because you want them to go to college. There is a saying, if you don't know where you are going, any road will get you there. Make sure that that road do not cost you over $100,000.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That is. I want to go to something in your book and ask you to make some comments. I really enjoyed the book. I want to ask you about here. As a prospective student, let me just re-identify, and I want you also to tell the people how they can get a copy of this book. Affordable college for everyone. Know before you go. Don't get trapped repaying a large student loan. Published by Outskirts Press. Dr. Tell us how you can obtain, one can obtain the book, and then I will ask you a question.
Well, you could obtain the book at Barnes & Noble, and firstly, it's a self-help guide. For example, this book has something for everyone. If you just got out of the military and you want to go back to school, what happens is a lot of people who go to the military and they're trained, very well trained in the military, but they do not have any education. They do not have any certification to back up their knowledge. Now, for most of the for-profit colleges, these students are prime students because the military is paying for their education. But they already served time in the military. They don't want to have to serve another 3-4 years in college. These students need to learn how to shop and take advantage of their life experience credits. These are people who just got out of prison. You just got out of prison, and you want to go reinvent yourself. Do not just go to a school for someone who went to prison. When it comes to college shopping, you shop at the end. You better make sure that the field that you choose to go into, you are employable. Before you even sign up for any college, make sure you are employable. Now, let's assume you have a bachelor's degree. And you're now ready to go back to school and get your master's degree. You have to be concerned about what is the purpose of you going back to school. If you're going back to school to make more money, you have to think carefully as to the field of choice for your master's degree. If you are a high school senior and you want to go to college, know that you are going to be working for the next 40 years. So early in your career, you have to be concerned about student loan debt. If you're an adult without a degree and you're over, you're in your 30s and you're tired and you want to go back to school, you have to do your research. Don't just get caught up with large student loans before you know what you want to do. If you're a student with disability, let's assume you have a disability and you want to go to college. Now, you have to remember, in K-12, they cater for students with disabilities. In colleges and universities, they do not cater for students with disabilities. You are going to be in an inclusive classroom with a lot of students that as a professor may not be able to, the different professors may not be able to work with you. So before you, as a student with disability, enroll in any college or university, You have to make sure that you have the necessary services that you will need so that you can be successful. Then there are also the immigrant student, the students who, you know, may have an I-20 student or undocumented. There are even resources in the book that could help you. I urge you, if you are going back to school, this book would enlighten you. It will have you thinking. It will expand your thought process so that you will make better decisions when it comes to attending college or university in the U.S.
Yes. I want to read to you something from your book, and I want to ask you a question. As a prospective student, an adult learner, or a high school senior, you need to arm yourself with the right questions to ask. You have the power to change things, because real change starts bottom up, not top down. You have the power to save time and money on your higher education. Know this, if you do not start asking the right questions, you may be paying too much for higher education in the future. We now live in an era where prospective students can individually and collectively create knowledge themselves and can shop for schools the same way they shop for everything else. And additionally, I'm just going to stop there and ask you to comment on that.
You know, I have been talking a lot, but let me properly introduce myself. I have been an admissions and enrollment trainer for the last 20 years. I have trained admissions representatives in different fields in order to sell education, and mind you, what we do is sell education. We are selling and you are buying. Now, if you want to go buy a television or you want to go to buy something, you do your research. But when you go to buy education, do you really know what is the right questions to ask? For example, I want to be a teacher. Who would hire me? What type of salaries I'm going to get? If I graduate from Seton Hall, would I make money, more money than the person who graduate from the community college? Do I need a master's degree? And if I do need a master's degree, should I pay $120,000 for a bachelor's degree when I have to now pay another $80,000 for a master's degree? Now, if you ask the right questions, you will be able to make better decisions when it comes to your higher education.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
Bottom line is, Doc, when you see an admissions advisor call you on the phone, and they are very nice with you, especially if they work for the for-profit schools, they're very nice with you, and they're bonding with you, oh, Lord, you feel very, very good, and you feel that you're in a safe environment, but at the end of the day, it is just a job for them. And before you come in to see them, they are well prepared and well rehearsed. The question is, are you prepared for them? They are prepared for you. Are you prepared for them? What I am doing is that I am teaching America how to prepare themselves for the admissions advisors or the enrollment managers who are prepared for them.
You, Doctor, I hate to laugh, but we're very pleasant people. But it's in the business. I mean, the admissions reps are not necessarily interested in students. They have to get an enrollment. That's the language that management uses.
It's about business. You have to remember all the schools are competing for each other business. It is not about you. It is not about the student. It's all about making a profit. For profit means for profit. They keep it real. Why can't you see that? They are keeping it real. They call themselves for profit. For profit don't mean anything else but for profit.
I wanted to ask you, do you see yourself having a future and in the for-profit school business, I just said the educational endeavor?
What I would like to do, my goal is to go out there and start a program. You see how it has Huntington Learning and Sylvan,
yes,
all those after-school programs? My goal is to go out and in every state in America, set up offices just to teach Americans how to shop for higher education. Because nobody should be trapped repaying a large student loan. The colleges and universities, they spend millions of dollars every year to train their enrollment counselors on how to sell their inventory. But nobody is teaching the public how to buy. The enrollment advisor are learning how to sell. They are being trained. They are being taught how to sell. But who is teaching American public how to buy?
I don't think the American public even realizes that they are buying. That's the major problem. I think they just are not seeing that they are buying. They think that, it's the vaguest notion about education.
Yeah, they don't see themselves as end user. And they have to realize.
There are schools like Thomas Edison, Charter Oaks, Regents College, or Excelsior College, that basically accepts credits through, it's not quite life experience, it's they use an examination program and a portfolio program. I was at Yale University one day, and I saw a man, and he had a degree. He was a professor there, and his degree was from Thomas Edison State College. So I mentioned to him, I said, "Wow, you got your degree by examination." He said, "Sure did," and he was on the faculty at Yale. Tell us about this whole learning experience, how one can take experiential education, or some call it life experience, and transform it into credits.
Well, firstly, before we even go there, we have to identify there's a lot of different classrooms today. Like you could go to schools, and if you're a smart person, there is like 1C classrooms where you could go in and you could take 8 classes if you're smart enough, and it will cost you 1 flat rate. So if you want to save money and you're smart, you could go to schools like that. Now, life experience credits and transfer credits. Lots of times when a student is going to want to get transferred credits, they don't understand that when you go to a school, the first thing you do is that you take a copy of the catalog and you store it. Remember, your college degree is a confirmation that you completed a course. Your transcripts, right, or your grade is proof that you completed a course. Your transcript is what is used. The catalog is what is used in order to get credits transferred. What a lot of individuals do not know is that lots of schools, what they do is that they change the name of the course, but the course description is the same. So what you have to do if you want to get as many credits transferred, you have to shop for the school, see which schools that accept the most credits. And if a school do not want to accept your credits, if you have your catalog and you could read your course description and you could show the course description in your catalog is the same as the course description in their catalog, they cannot deny transferability. Now, for life experience credits, there's a lot of young people who could even get life experience credits transferred. If you work at customer service, you work in Walmart, look at the courses and look at a program you're doing, read the course description, and you have to ask yourself, is this what I do daily on my job? Do not take any course. Do not take anything that you think that you already are proficient in.
Yeah, see, and you know where the trick is? I've watched schools do this. And I'm talking about regional credit that schools refuse to accept people's credits. Because, you know, it's a business. I mean, look, you're selling credit for $1,800 or $2,000 for credit. I mean, I don't know. It's just outrageous. I've known people who spent $200,000 for a bachelor's degree from a school that, you know, if you go out in Iowa, they wouldn't even know where in the hell the school is located. It's getting so bad in higher education that people actually have to go to the web to find out whether the school is accredited. No one knows any of these places now. Colleges
well, you
that
know
used
why,
to be called.
You know why tuition goes up? One of the things people don't realize. You know, and God bless this country, because America, the government is really trying their best to help. But what a lot of people don't realize is that every time the Pell Grant goes up and the state grant goes up, increases, colleges and universities raise their tuition, and the taxpayers are paying for it. So at the end of the day, nothing is getting any better. So if next year the Pell Grant goes up to, say, $6,000, tuition will increase. Because the colleges and universities, they know, you have to remember, excuse me, colleges and universities, they don't mind charging a lot of money because their money is backed by the federal government. So believe me when I tell you, they get paid.
Doctor, I just wonder, is there a role for the for-profit schools? I have just seen so much bad misuse of the for-profit model and have gone home many nights, have gotten superseded my enrollment. It felt really dirty. Am I right for feeling that way? Is there any role for these institutions?
Well, the thing is, though, as I mentioned earlier, ignorance is no longer an excuse, right? The for-profit have never lied.
Right.
They have never hidden behind anything. They saw a weakness, and they capitalized on the weakness in the sense that people wanted shorter programs. People wanted specific training. And they gave the general public what they wanted. And I think it was very, very creative of them. Don't knock them. They were very smart people. But at the end of the day, the state schools could have embraced the opportunity and offered the same services the poor for-profit do, but they don't. And this is why the for-profit continue to get big and strong, because the state schools, they just like the community colleges that is funded. You know, we talk about the not-for-profit and the for-profit. One of the reasons why the for-profit schools have to charge as much money is because their only source of revenue is student enrollment. Whereas
right.
The community colleges, they get money from different sources, between the state government, between the federal government, between philanthropy and fellowship and student tuition. They get money from different sources. And because they get money from different sources, they now could charge less tuition. But they need to do a better job and offer better courses. For example, if I was, with all my expertise in for-profit, I guarantee you, if they were to give me a job as a president of a community college, no student will go to a for-profit. Because I will turn the school culture around to make sure that every student wants to come to my community college.
And, you know, it also, while we edit, I also think about the historical black colleges and universities. If they had people from the for-profit model running those schools, I think they would be in a totally different situation. I mean,
they
some of them
will.
Are the,
what's going
and I think
on?
The marketing campaign is atrocious.
This is, you know what is going on in the community colleges, what they call in the insurance industry, churning. If you look for a job, if you look at the jobs for presidents of community colleges, they ask, oh, you need to have this amount of interest in experience working in community college and stuff like that as a president. But bottom line is, none of the community colleges are doing very well. So why are you hiring people who move from one community college to another? Why don't you go and look, hire people from the for-profit and have them change the school culture? But no, they just keep looking for people within their same circle, and it's called churning. So nothing is getting better.
Yes, that is. And also, let's talk about the historical black colleges and universities. You know, I just want to, just a moment, just meditate on this. You know, I've always thought the historical black colleges that are located in the South should have campuses in the northern cities. I mean, where their population are. And if they're not doing a very good job either of marketing themselves, most of them are not known, and they're not putting together programs that lead people right into the job market. Talk with us about that.
Well, again, a college is more than just education. All right? A college is more than just academic programs. The average college today have more deans. They're hiring deans because they're building more and more academic programs because they want to attract more and more students. So they're on the front end. They're doing a pretty decent job bringing the students in. But there's no support services for these hundreds of thousands of students they're bringing in on the front end in order to get them jobs on the back end. So you go to certain colleges and they offer 250 academic programs. But the question is, as you mentioned earlier, where are the students getting jobs? So why it should be more balanced. If you have 50 deans, to me, you should have 100 placement officers. Because if you want to bring in 150,000 students, or say 60,000 students, when these students graduate, they need to be placed. What are you doing to place them? But what's going on? Accreditation in most of the state universities are not concerned with job placement. They are concerned with the size of the library. They are concerned with their athletic programs. They are concerned about their dorms. They are not concerned about the welfare of their graduates. And this is what's killing America today. How could you have a college, a university, that is more concerned about the quality of their dorms, the quality of their athletic programs, the quality of the amount of course offerings, and very little is said or done to place students in fields where they could get jobs. There is something terribly wrong with this picture, and America needs to wake up.
Yes, it does.
America needs to wake up.
What can we do as citizens, firstly, and then as parents, secondly? I just think it's citizens. I'm hoping that in these neighborhoods, as we travel to the United States with our program, that you can conduct, conduct workshops. Are you going to be doing any workshops in the next few months, and if so, tell us where you'll be doing them at.
This is my heart's desire. Dr. Muhammad,
I have worked in higher education for over 20 years. In the 20 years, I have seen many schools closed on me. I have seen many displaced students. I have seen many students who graduated and ended up with working in the same jobs they were trying to get out from. Don't get me wrong, I have some wonderful success stories as well. I believe that if Americans are taught, are armed with the right information when it comes to higher education, it will reduce the amount of financial burden on parents. Years ago, 20 years ago, a parent could retire. Higher education has become too expensive. That if at 45 years old, a parent has to take out $25,000 to $30,000 for their children to go to college, that parent could no longer retire at 67. They now have to retire at 75 or may never retire because the money that they should be putting away towards their retirement, they are now using it to repay student loan. That is unfair. People should not have to work until they die. People should be able to retire and have some quality of life.
Yes. Let me ask you also about the medical profession. Nursing. What are some of the hot fields? We talked about IT. What are some of the other hot fields?
All medical, as I mentioned earlier, science. You could never go wrong with science. Science is a great field to get into. You know, America is living older. You know, the life expectancy of an American now is well over 60. So America is living older. And because America is living older, there is a need for a lot of people in the health field. And nurses and doctors and most health professionals make good money. So it's a good field to get into. But a lot of the universities have hospitals. And they have, so if you could get a lot of your training in the hospital that you work at.
Yes. I think that, you know, to show you how medicine is coming, making a real blast, I think there's a need for about 200,000 physicians. And Seton Hall has reopened its medical school. I think the field of medicine, it seems to me to be one of the most secure fields. They said that's the medicine, nursing, the whole medical field, yes, is just growing.
You know, in America, they say the three best fields to get into. In fact, you know, I was talking to a friend earlier, and we were talking about what's the three best hustles to get into America. And they say the three best hustles to get into America in America today, the first is healthcare. You can't go wrong. The second is churches. Mm-hmm. And the third is education.
What was the second?
Churches.
Yes.
They said that, you know what, there's so many people, you know, we want to go to heaven, so we go to church and we put our tithes and our offering. So the first hustle is healthcare, the second hustle is churches, and the third hustle is education. People just believe when it comes to doctors, you need the best health care, so you pay for good health care. When it comes to churches, you go to church. God says, the Bible says, you need to pay your tithe and your offering. So a good Christian will pay their tithe and offering. The third is education. People believe that you have to go to school in order to get a good job and to get a quality of life. So those three industries, people pay without asking. And any time there are industries where people are paying without asking the right questions, you will find a lot of hustle going on.
Ha, 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 ha. I'm telling you, I've just seen it. You know, it's really pathetic. You know, I know a person that graduated from one of the for-profit colleges. Again, they're very aggressive. The Jerry Springer Show, all of these shows, they target our people on those shows.
I don't understand.
Pardon me?
I don't understand. I want to answer the question appropriately, and I can't. Would you repeat the question?
Well, it was sort of an observation that our young people attend these for-profit colleges. They are regionally accredited, and I want you to talk about regional accredited. And I don't really want to beat up on the for-profit colleges because they do a great job of marketing themselves. But, I just think that if you don't know, ignorance, as you said, is not an excuse.
Yeah.
So,
there is regional accreditation and there is national accreditation.
Right.
All right?
Your
regional accreditation is like the state schools, like the Medgar Evers College, the Seton Halls, and they're the regional accredited. The national accredited would be most of the for-profit schools are nationally accredited. Now, the regionally accredited schools, a lot of people don't know, is that the accreditors, they're the ones who control Title IV funds or financial aid. So the schools that are regionally accredited, which is most of the state schools, the creditors, like, you know, we talk about who the creditors are. The creditors is a body that are hired by the schools themselves. So they self-regulate each other. So let's assume I work for one of the big schools. I could basically apply to be a creditor. So what I do, I would go and audit other schools, and we would use each other best practices, and we protect each other. So they self-regulate each other, so outsiders don't come in. The government, they do everything. The government has really nothing to do with it. All the government does is print the directories of all the schools that are accredited and all the schools that are not accredited. The accrediting agencies are what we call in higher education the old boys club.
Right. That is... Now tell us about national accreditation.
National accreditation, because there is regional accreditation and national accreditation. If you graduate from a nationally accredited school, a regionally accredited school may not accept your credits. So when you are choosing schools, let's assume you want to be an educator, and you go get your bachelor's degree at a nationally accredited school, some regionally accredited school may not accept your credits, may not accept your degree towards a master's degree. So if you are looking to get into a program where you want to get your bachelor's, your master's, your PhD, it may be in your best interest to go to a regionally accredited school.
So, yes, so the national accredited schools, that doesn't mean your credit can be transferred. That's a problem because...
No, transfer of credit, is up to the accepting institution. Nothing is black and white because most of the schools are competing with each other. Today, there are flexibility. So some regionally accredited school would accept your credit because, as I said, they are now competing for each other's business. But you have to do your homework before you enroll in any school because higher education is no longer a destination, it's a journey. You have to plan before you go and get yourself caught up in large student loan debt.
Yes, it is. You can join the conversation. We're having a delightful conversation with Dr. Marlena Coggins-Berghammer. And Dr. is an educational consultant and a future college president. So any of you who serve on the board of trustees of Angie's colleges, you would do your delightful service to contact Dr. Doctor, I want to move now to a bit of biography and tell us, how did Dr. Marlena Coggins-Berghammer become Dr. Marlena Coggins-Berghammer? How did that take place? Tell us about you.
Oh, Lord, it's a long story. I grew up in Trinidad.
We got 2 hours, so how long would you like to make? Rewrite the biography.
Well, what I would like to do is I'd like to have a second session.
Well, you're going to get that anyway. That's already a bonus. So.
Yes.
You're already going to get the second session.
Yes.
So,
but I was born in Trinidad, and I came to America many years ago. And I was one of those people who didn't believe that college was for me. I was not smart. I was not a smart person. And I struggled with education all my life, really, really struggled with education. And I was one of those women who thought that I could make it by possibly getting married and getting someone to take care of me. But after my third divorce, I realized that that wasn't happening. So I had two choices. Either go back to school or look for husband number four. I decided to go back to school. It was scary. But one of the things I had to my advantage, I had no options. I had no choice but to make it happen. And I took baby steps. I started my first class as a I went to secretarial school. And after I finished my secretarial school, I realized that, heck, I could do this. Then I went to school and I got my associate degree. And every time I completed a degree, I got more confident, more self-confidence. And I took baby steps one after the other. And I actually became a doctor. I never thought I would ever make it to become a doctor. Now, I am pro-education. I really believe in education because it has changed me. I was able to reinvent myself. I was able to get a quality of life that I only dreamed of. So all I could say is that I am not here talking bad about higher education. I believe everybody should try to go to expand their knowledge as much as they can. The only thing I totally disagree with is a lot of student loan debt. I really believe that higher education without student loans is possible.
Now, is it possible to get an education? Because, I mean, we're going to be in debt for a lot of things, but I think, I know you're right. I know that a person could go to one of the community colleges or state colleges and get the same degree or less, start out at a community college, get most of the supportive services that they wouldn't get and probably some of the other colleges, and do as well and come out with less debt. But is there something wrong with having debt?
Is it wrong with having debt?
Yes.
Okay, let me ask you this question. If you are 24 years old, you have $40,000 in student loan debt, and you're making $35,000 a year, would you be able to pay that student loan off? Or how long would it take you to pay that student loan off?
Mm-hmm. Right.
The point is, the point is, there's a lot of young people that are leaving college and cannot leave home and moving back home. Because if you graduate from college and you are a young person and your salary is $45,000, by the time they take off your taxes, you're down to, say, every week your take home is $1,200. If you want to get an apartment, you want to get a car, and you want to pay, and you have to pay off your student loans, you can't have no quality of life. Which it means if you want a car, something got to give. You have to go back home so that you don't have to pay rent, so that you could pay your student loan. And you better hope that you get increases and you could move up the ladder. You could move up the ladder professionally, because if you cannot move up the ladder professionally, by the time you're 30 years old, when you're ready to go back to school to get your master's degree, you still owe $25,000 in student loans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
That makes a lot of sense. Now let's talk about a person that has some remedial issues. A person who is not really academically ready, well, let's say they have some very serious academic problems in math or writing or English. How does one deal with that?
I would go to night school if I was them. I would possibly go to night school and possibly do my GED.
All right, say if they already have a GED, but they have some writing issues.
And that is what the for-profit schools do. The for-profit schools, they are the students that they prey on. The for-profit schools know that these students, because they're remedial, they cannot get into the community college to do non-credit courses, so they are now doing non-credit courses. So now, I don't want to do non-remedial, so I would now go pay 3 times as much at a for-profit school for a degree, so you get a degree and you still can't read and write.
Now, what programs are available for a person who has what we, I guess, in our community we call it the developmental issues?
Well, if you are diagnosed as having a mentally challenged, there are a lot of different programs by the state that you could actually go to school. And don't have to take out student loans. Like, for example, if you're in the state of New York, there is this state program called VESID. And VESID is a program, if you have any type of disability, they will pay for your education. So if you have a student that's mentally challenged, you shouldn't have that student take out student loans. You should look for resources, because the state have a lot of resources for people with learning problems.
Yes. We talked about Vesit and New Jersey as a, what about a student who perhaps has a GED, has a high school diploma, but still have weaknesses in these areas, don't want to go to one of these, perhaps can't get into the, community colleges. What should that person do?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, if you have to take remedial classes to get yourself up to the level, the reading and writing level, then you have to do remedial. You have two choices. You could go to night high school, or you could go to the community college and do remedial. But if you go to the community college and do remedial, you know it costs money. If you go to the high school and you take English and math classes, or you hire tutors, or you go to one of those Huntington Learnings, you know, they're not just for kids, anyone who wants to learn, you could possibly go to, there are options out there if you don't want to do remedial. There's a lot of that going on today, because today there's a lot of people where English is your second language who have difficulties, and these are the students, many of these students are in remedial classes.
Yes. A Huntington, Will they work with an adult, or is there like an adult literacy program that a person could attend?
There's a lot of adult literacy programs that people could look for. That is what I would suggest. Or get tutors if you want. There's also tutors. There's a lot of professors that do one-on-one tutoring that helps a lot as well. And sometimes getting a tutor might be even better than going to the remedial classes.
What about the affordability? See, one of the things these for-profits prey on is the affordability, and they can wrap all of this up in this very expensive education.
But how can you say come call something affordable if you have to take out student loans? To me, affordability means you shouldn't have to take out student loans. So if you have to take out student loans, it's not affordable.
I agree with you.
You know, they just set their prices in a sense that, you know, you could get the Pell Grant, you don't qualify for the state grants. You could get the Pell Grant, and possibly you could get the SOB, the Stafford loan, and it's backed by the government, so it may not be credit-based. So if you get a Pell and you get a Stafford loan, you know, and the Perkins loan and all the government loan that is backed by the government, then you could go to school, and even if you default on your student loan, the school could still go after the government because the government is the one who backed your loan.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, we've been speaking with Dr. Marlena Coggins-Berkhammer. And, Doctor, how can one reach you, and how can one get your book? And tell us your website.
Well, my book could be, you could purchase my book at, in fact, as I said, it's not a book, it's a self-help guide. And the self-help guide, you could purchase it at Amazon.com. You could get it at Barnes & Noble. You could get it at on my website, www.affordablecollegeforeveryoneus.com. Or you could get it at the publisher's Outskirts Press. The cost of the self-help guide is $29.99, but believe me, it has so much information. The $29.99 investment could save you thousands of dollars in college tuition.
Yes. So, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, we've had a great guest, and she will be returning again next month to discuss college and its affordability, it's higher education, period. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You have listened once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. Our guest today was Dr. Berkhammer, great educator. Do you have a website, Doctor?
Yes, www.affordablecollegeforeveryoneus.com.
And please put it on your Facebook and tell your people that they can download this program, this episode, by going to www.blogtalk. Find a link and we will, www.blogtalkradio.com/religionmeansalive, and go to today's broadcast, and you will hear this broadcast. Like, it was an exciting and phenomenal program. These are the kind of programs we have on every day, something of information to uplift the spirit and deliver people to their destiny. We were helped along on that lifelong journey by Dr. B, as I call her affectionately. Dr. B, thank you again for listening to Religion Means Alive.
All right. Okay, bye.
Bye.